Reading from The Unknown Reality by Jane Roberts, a Seth book, volume 2. Session 714. First of all, there are notes stating that Jane reported that she was getting a quote unquote pyramid or quote unquote cone effect. At such times, she feels that subjective shape coming down just over her head. Always pointed upward, symbolically perhaps, toward other realities. She also thought she might go into her quote unquote massive feeling at any moment. Quote, but I don't think any of this has to do with Seth, too, end quote, Jane had said. And then going right into Seth's dictation. So Seth states, this is somewhat of a momentous evening for Rupert. As I speak, he is experiencing certain sensations in which his body feels drastically elongated, the head reaching out beyond the stars, the whole form straddling realities. Now, in a sense, the physical body does this always. That is, it sits astride realities. Containing within itself dimensions of time and being that cannot be even verbally described. The cells themselves are, quote unquote, eternal, though they exist in your world only for a time in quotes. The unknown reality and the psyche's greater existence cannot be separated from the intimate knowledge of the flesh, however. For the life of the flesh takes place within that framework. As earlier mentioned, the conscious self generally focuses in but one small dimension. That dimension is experienced as fully as possible. Its clear brilliance and exquisite focus, possible only because you tune into it and bring it to the forefront of your attention. In your terms, when you understand how to do this, then you can begin to tune in to other quote unquote stations as well. You know where physical reality is then, on the dial of your multi-dimensional television set. While focused within that living scene, you can learn to travel through it, leaving the quote unquote surface picture intact and whole. In a way, you program yourself going about your daily duties as conscientiously and effectively as usual, but at the same time, you discover an additional portion of your own reality. This does not diminish the physical self. Instead, in fact, it enriches it. You discover that the psyche has many aspects. While fully enjoying the physical aspects, you find that there is some part of you left over, so to speak, and that part can travel into other realities. It can also then return, bringing the physically oriented self, quote unquote, snapshots of its journeys. These snapshots are usually interpreted in terms of your home program. Otherwise, they might make no sense to the physical self. Throughout the ages, people have taken such journeys. The snapshots are developed in the quote unquote dark room that exists between your world and those visited. The people who have journeyed into the unknown reality have always been adventurous, yet many had already seen the snapshots sent to your world by others. And so they begin to clothe their own original visions of their journeys in the guise of those other pictures. A group of handy ideas, concepts, and images then formed. The clear vision of such explorers became lost. The travelers no longer tried to make their own original snapshots of these strange environments and realities through which they passed. It was easier to interpret their experiences through the psychic penny postcards. At one time, these postcards represented initial original visions and individual interpretations. Later, however, they began to serve as guidebooks, consulted ahead of time. For instance, if you plan to travel to a distant country in your own world, you can find such publications to tell you what to expect. When you journey into other realities, or when your consciousness leaves your body, you can also rely upon guidebooks that program your activities ahead of time. Instead of telling you that you take an airplane from a certain airport at a certain time for a particular earthly destination, leaving one latitude and longitude and arriving at another set, instead of telling you that you leave your country for another ruled by a dictator or a president or by an anarchy, they will tell you that you leave this astral plane for any one of a number of others, ruled as the case may be by lords or masters, gods and goddesses. Instead of pointing out to you, as in earthly travel booklets, the locations of art galleries and museums, they will direct you to the Akashic Records. Instead of leading you to the archaeological sites of your world and its great ruins of previous civilizations, they will tell you how to find Atlantis and Mu and other times in your past. So you take a psychic guided tour into other realities. The unknown seems known, so that you are not an explorer, after all, but a tourist, taking with you the paraphernalia of your own civilization and beliefs that are quite conventional. There are inner conventions, then, as there are outer ones. As the exterior mores try to force you to conform to your generally accepted ideas, so the interior conventions try to force you to make your inner experience conform to preconceived packaging. There are good reasons for conventions. Generally, they help organize experience. If they are lightly held to and accepted, they can serve well as guidelines. Applied with a heavy hand, they become unnecessary dogma, rigidly limiting experience. This applies to inner and outer activity. Conventions are the result of stratified and rigid, quote-unquote, spontaneity. At one time, in your terms, each custom had a meaning. Each represented a spontaneous gesture, an individual reaction. When these become a system of order, however, the original spontaneity is lost, and you project an artificial order that serves to stratify behavior rather than express it. So there are psychic customs as there are physical ones, religious and psychic dogmas, guided tours of consciousness in which you are told to follow a certain line or a certain program. You become afraid of your private interpretation of whatever reality you find yourself experiencing. Rupert has thus far insisted upon his private vision and his unique expression of the unknown reality as he experiences it, and so he brings back bulletins that do not agree with the conventional psychic line. Alright, at their break, Rob inserts that Jane was aware of the elongated giant-sized feeling now, as she had been just before the session began. Jane had said, "Everything's in proportion, though. It's crazy, but I feel that when I stand up, my head could go through the ceiling." And then Rob notes, "But she looked quite normal to me, and of course nothing out of character happened when she stood up." Alright, Seth goes on. He says, "The psychic postcards and travel folders are handy and colorful. They are also highly misleading. Once, individual travelers took those snapshots and they represented original interpretations of other realities. They stood for individual versions of certain travelers making brief glimpses of strange worlds and interpreting their experiences to the best of their abilities. As such, they were very valid. They were as valid as any snapshot that you might take of your backyard in the morning. That picture, however, would vary considerably from one taken by an inhabitant of your planet in a different part of the world and in a different environment. If there were discrepancies among the snapshots, however, people worried. While you expect pictures of your own reality to be diverse, those who journeyed into the unknown reality became concerned if their snapshots did not agree. So they tried desperately to make all of the pictures look alike. They touched them up, in other words. First of all, in your own world, those travelers into unknown realms were considered outcasts, so to speak, as if they were picking up television programs that no one else saw. If their stories of their experiences did not jibe, who would believe them? They felt threatened. They felt that they had to tell the same story, or they would be considered insane. So they made a tacit agreement interpreting their experiences in the terms used by those who had gone before. Before in quotes. You make your own reality. So programmed ahead of time, they perceived data according to the psychic conventions that had been established. There are tigers in Asia, but you can travel through Asia, and if you do not want to, you'll never see a tiger. It's according to where you go. In the unknown reality, your thoughts are instantly made apparent and real, materialized according to your beliefs. There, if you believe in demons, you will see them, without ever realizing that they are a part of the environment of your psyche, formed by your beliefs, and thrown out as mirages over a very real environment that you do not perceive. You will believe the psychic tour books and go hunting for demons instead of tigers. Individually and in mass, you form the world that you know, yet it has an overall individual and mass basis, so that some things are agreed upon. You view those things through your own unique vision. You form the reality. It is a valid one. It is experience. It is not, therefore, unreal, but one of the appearances that reality takes. It has a valid basis, an environment that you all accept, in which certain experiences are possible. So the same applies to other realities. You know there is a difference between, say, the picture before your eyes and a postcard. Quote unquote, artificial renditions of it. So there is a difference between the unknown reality and the postcards that have been given to you to depict it. In your terms, Rupert has been out for the real thing, to experience the unknown reality directly through his own perceptions, as divorced from the scenes given him by the postcards. Something different happens at 10:47. Jane had said, "I'm out of it," and she abruptly coughed. Then she said, "I'm onto something. Wait a minute, I don't know if I can get it or what." She coughed again and again. Her voice had become very hoarse since break, so much so that a few minutes ago I'd been on the verge of asking her to end the session. But this is Jane. This is Jane talking. She's experiencing something. So Rob's recording it. She says, quote, "If I can get this, it'll be something, I'll tell you. What I'm getting is something like it would be in real fast, quick, beautiful sounds that I can't duplicate. Very quick, very musical, connected with the spin of electrons and cellular composition. The spin of electrons is faster than the cellular composition. The faster speed of the electrons somehow gives the cells their boundaries. And there's something that's in a trance, say, in crystals, that's alive in the cells. Wait a minute, Jane exclaimed again. What I'm getting is a fantastic sound that's imprisoned in a crystal, that speaks through light. That's the essence of personality. I'm getting almost jewel-like colored sounds. I'll see what I can do with it. I want to get it in verbal stuff, and I'm getting it fast. She pauses and then says, and we're speaking of personality now, coughing again, and says, as the seed falls, blown by the wind in any environment, so there's a seed of personality that rides on the wings of itself and falls into the worlds of many times and places, falling with a sound that is its own true tone, struck in different chords. So Jane goes on and she says, sounds are aware of their own separateness, gloriously unique, yet each one merging into a symphony. Each sound recognizes itself as itself, striking the dimensional medium in which it finds its expression. Yet it's aware of the infinite other multitudinous sounds it makes in other realities, the instruments through which it so grandly plays. Each cell, C-E-L-L, each cell strikes in the same fashion, and so does each self, S-E-L-F, self, in a kaleidoscope in which each slightest variation has meaning and affects the individual notes made by all. So we strike in more realities than one, and I hear those notes together, yet separately, perhaps as raindrops, and attempt to put them together and yet hear each separate note. Seth, or somebody's saying, maybe it's just me, relates to the people in our time. I've tried to do the same thing, but I suddenly heard my own true tone, which I'm bound to follow, to go beyond the conventionalized postcards. I'm done. End quote by Jane. So, she just had herself a little experience. At 11:03, she ends her trance and says, wow, I'm out, I am telling you. And she says this groggily after a few moments. And then she states, I don't know how you're going to put this together with the Seth stuff. It's like a note that finds its own true tone. And when it does, nothing else makes sense. That's all I can say. But once you strike it, you know that's it. End quote by Jane. So right here, Rob is stating that her enhanced state of consciousness had been her quote-unquote own, her own. And Jane goes on to say, and Rob notes that, she says, I know there's a universe between my chair here in the living room and the kitchen floor. She got up, but I can walk it okay. When you strike your own true tone, you recognize it and you've got it made. You know your own meaning in the universe, even if you can't verbalize it. End quote by Jane. All right, then Jane adds, after eating, she adds, it's strange. I feel that no matter which way I turn, there's a path laid out for me, and I never felt that way before. So now Rob is giving his interpretation of the whole thing after the whole day. He says, much of Jane's day had been made up of a series of altered and at times even near ecstatic states of consciousness, each one expressing a unique and creative facet of her essentially mystical nature. Even though not at her best, she had a cold, She'd been able to draw upon lavish amounts of energy. I think that her experience with inner sound after the session represented her interpretation of the information Seth gave on feeling tones some 2 years ago. He says to go to the 613th session for Chapter 1 of Personal Reality. I will put that link. And he adds, there are certainly deep connections between Jane's apprehension of her true tone and Seth's statement in that session that each of us possesses certain qualities of feeling uniquely our own, quote, that are like deep musical chords, end quote. He went on to say at 10:06, quote, this is Seth, these feeling tones then pervade your being. They are the form your spirit takes when combined with flesh, end quote. And Rob adds, I also think that Jane's sensing of her true path reflects her understanding of Seth's subsequent remark at 10:16, where he said, quote, the feeling tone is the motion and fiber and timbre of your energy devoted to your physical experience. End quote by Seth. And Rob notes that Jane has written and she tries to, quote, this is Jane, view our three-dimensional existence and this universe from outside this framework, end quote. Or to travel beyond the conventionalized psychic postcards. So that's the end of the session. And session notes on session note number 2 is wanting you to go to Appendix 19 again. And to see the 612th session for material on both Seth 2 and Jane's feelings of massiveness. And I will find those links if possible. And then you guys can read number 6 if you want. Just pause on the Akashic record and how Jane doesn't believe in them, not in the conventional terms that it is stated. And you can also read note number 7 about Atlantis and the land of Mu. Rob is saying for Atlantis material and references in volume 2 of Unknown Reality, see Appendix 14. So when that's ready, you'd go to that. And note number 8 on those travelers into unknown worlds. I'm just going to go over here and read a part of that. But I also want it available for you guys in case you want to pause and read. So quickly pause and then going down. Quickly pause. So here's the part I was going to read. Seth had told them in a personal session, you each must have a basic approval of yourself. And this is information not only for the two of you, of course, but for others. Which is, you must trust your basic being with its characteristics and abilities. You have them for a reason in all of their unique combinations. You should also avoid labels, for these can stereotype your perception of yourself. End quote by Seth. And obviously, you guys know a little bit about Appendix 19. When that is officially ready, go to that. And note number 10 says, see the material on Jane and mysticism in Appendix 1 for Volume 1. Which is not available either, sorry, but eventually it will be. And note 11 says, Rob notes, of interest here are a few excerpts from a personal session held just a year later in October 1975. During the session, Seth discussed inner sound in connection with Jane's own physical symptoms. So Rob is saying go to Volume 1, Unknown Reality, the 679th session before 1031, and to also see Note 8, which you might not see, but that's okay. The quotations below are also related to the material on inner sound, light, and electromagnetic values in Chapter 5 of Personal Reality. So Seth at 11:07 p.m. said, "The movement of the joints makes sound. The sounds are messages. When hormones are released, they make sounds. Those sounds are messages. I say sounds, yet these inner body sounds can only be compared to an interior body situation, where sound operates as light. You are used to thinking in terms of opaque or transparent color. In those terms, there is opaque light and transparent light as well. Sound has light value, and light has sound value. These operate within the body. Each frequency, so to speak, functions as a messenger, triggering body response before an actual reaction is apparent. In any body difficulty, the light and sound frequencies become out of tune, you might say. The overall true tone is muddied. When Rupert began her book Politics, he experienced his true tone mentally and psychically. Though he did not realize it, this gave him something to go by, so that now he is unconsciously still bringing about the physical equivalent of that true tone." End quote by Seth. So that was another interesting chapter, right?